Welcome to Common Sense Care, parenting gender-confused kids with truth and love. So-called affirmative care is the gender industry's one-size-fits-all answer for any and all kids who suffer with their gender identity. In no other area of medicine, psychology, or education is one treatment plan assigned to every person. At Partners for Ethical Care, we consider every child to be an individual, and that child should be given the care and support that's most appropriate for him or her. So welcome back. I'm Maria Keffler.
And I'm Erin Brewer. And Maria, what are we talking about today?
Today we're talking about investigating gender ideology. It is illogical, inconsistent, and unscientific. And wow, this is a big topic for today.
It is, but it's so important because so many people are just getting one message about this, and that is the affirmative care model, that if your child has these feelings, that you must affirm them. And I just think it's really important for parents to have an alternative narrative about this and to understand why it is that we are suggesting that the affirmative care model is really actually harmful. And one of the things that I kind of hearken back to anytime somebody says, you know, well, why wouldn't you affirm them? Is I think about the purpose of therapy. And when somebody goes to therapy, it's because they're having some kind of distress, some kind of internal angst. And they go to a therapist to help work that out. And if you go to a therapist and you have depression, and the therapist looks at you and says, well, I think you have every right to feel depressed. Why don't you go home, get in bed, eat cookies, and just stay there until you aren't depressed anymore. Or if you have somebody who's anxious, and if the therapist says, oh my goodness, well, based on what you've said, I think you should be anxious. I'm surprised you're able to function. In fact, you might want to just check into a hospital right now because life is overwhelming for you. Or if you have an anorexic who feels she's fat, and the therapist said, oh, you know, you really, I can tell that you feel fat. I think you really are fat. So how can we help you to not be so fat? I mean, in none of these cases would people feel like that was a good therapeutic model. And yet that's exactly what's happening right now when it comes to gender identity issues.
Yeah, they've conflated the meaning of affirmation. Affirmation has been a word that our culture has really focused on, about affirming someone's worth, affirming someone's value, affirming someone's feelings. And we talked about that in an earlier episode, that we do want to affirm people's feelings. Oh, I can understand why you would feel that way. Let's address the facts about what those feelings might be confusing you about. And so by calling this, you have to affirm someone's transgender identity, calling that affirmative care, it's conflating the meaning of affirmative. Mm-hmm. And affirmation is about your own worth, not about affirming everything that you think, because we all have ways that we are not thinking correctly about things. We're all wrong about something. Yeah. If we weren't wrong about something, then we would be perfect people who, you know, have the mind of God, basically.
And we wouldn't need therapists.
Right. We wouldn't. So we want to kind of look at, this is not really affirmative. This is not an affirming thing to tell kids, oh yes, you really are the wrong gender. You really were born in the wrong body.
And so one of the concerns that I have about therapists affirming a child is that what they are affirming is that the child is born in the wrong body. This whole idea that somebody can be born in the wrong body. And basically that child is inherently flawed, and that the only way to fix that is to harm themselves. And so not only is it a really dangerous idea just generally to affirm somebody's negative thought processes, but in this case, it's especially dangerous because the therapist is basically acknowledging to that child that they are inherently flawed, that they were born in the wrong body. And Maria, can somebody be born in the wrong body?
There is no scientific evidence saying that you can be born in the wrong body. There's no test anyone can do. They can't do a scan of your brain and say, oh, look, you have a girl brain, you know, or oh, look, that's a boy brain. There's no physiological markers that would suggest that. There's just no research to support that at all. We are our bodies.
Now, and our chromosomes are what determine that. Mm-hmm. And And every woman has XX brain cells. So even if they are non-conforming, even if they are different from most women, you know, say you have a woman who is a auto mechanic and, you know, likes to play in the mud and wants to wear boots and plaid shirts, her brain cells are still XX brain cells. There's no way to suggest that somebody can be born in the wrong body is to suggest that somehow there's like an essence or a soul of that person who was accidentally put in the wrong sex. And like you said, that just makes no sense. There's no way to test that. And what concerns me the most is that they're basing these feelings on regressive stereotypes. And so if somebody comes and says, you know, I was born in the wrong body, Maria, what does that mean to you?
It means that they are looking at the way society says a girl or a boy should be and comparing themselves to that stereotype and finding themselves lacking.
And I think that one of the things that really confounds me is that people will say, not only do they feel like they should have been born the other sex, but that they are. And at least in my experience, it's really impossible to know what it's like to be something that you're not. You know, I can never know what it's like to be a cat. I can imagine what it might be like to be a cat, and I can kind of put my own thoughts and feelings about what it might be like to be a cat, but really I can never know what it is like to be a cat, even if I do all kinds of research, understand their neurology, their physiology. I can feel like I want to be a cat, but I can't ever be a cat, no matter what.
I have never experienced life from anyone's perspective but my own. Mm-hmm. I've never been in anybody else's head. Mm-hmm. And so when someone says, well, I just feel like a boy, mm-hmm. what does that even mean? You don't know what it feels like to be anybody else. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it feels like to be you, Erin.
Right. Yeah. I only know what it feels like to be Erin, this kind of woman, the woman that I am. I don't even know what it feels like to be another woman, let alone a man.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that just doesn't make any sense because you only experience life from your own perspective. So I don't know what it feels like to be Erin Brewer. I don't know what it feels like to be Angelina Jolie. I don't know what it feels like to be Chris Pine. I don't know what it feels like to be my husband. Mm. I only know what it feels like to be me. So that's really nonsensical.
Yeah, and I have to admit that, you know, as someone who did suffer from, you know, what would be diagnosed today as gender dysphoria, I know what it's like to believe that I'm inherently flawed, that there is something inherently wrong with me, that I would be so much better if people would accept me as something else. And that I do understand that, and I don't want to minimize the feelings that people are having because they are very real feelings. But the narrative that has surrounded that is so flawed. And when I was growing up, the therapist did not say, "You're right, Erin, you are a boy," and affirm that. Instead, they kept digging and digging to figure out what it was that was happening within myself that I felt so strongly that it wasn't okay to be me, which is fundamentally what this is about, is these children saying, it's not okay to be me, so I want to be somebody else. And a lot of times trans activists use what they call research to justify that this affirmative care model is the way we should proceed with these kids. And the research is so incredibly flawed that they call upon. And you know something about the transgender studies that they're using.
Yeah, one of the things that the transgender activists like to say is that transgender kids, people will commit suicide if they're not affirmed. Yeah. And they cite a study that, look, this proves that transgender people are more suicidal if they're not affirmed. But the study is so weak. It's so flawed. It had 27 subjects. It was a survey. And I believe the question that was asked was, have you ever thought about hurting yourself? Mm-hmm. Well, I bet most of us at some point in our lives thought, I wonder if I should just off myself here. Mm-hmm. I think most of us have experienced that. So asking that question to 27 self-identified, you know, transgender identified people, that's so flawed. That doesn't apply widely. It's too small of a sample. It's too much of a self-selected sample. It's not random. And that question is so loaded and so leading. Whereas some of the good data that we have, I've mentioned this before, a study out of Sweden that they studied for 30 years, people who had had sex reassignment surgery, and their rate of suicide is so much higher than what's in the general population.
Right.
And their rates of mental health are so worse than the rest of the population.
And it and the Swedish study was not self-selected. It was the entire, you know, population, anybody who had sought treatment for gender identity issues. And it was longitudinal, which is so important. One of the big flaws that I see with the studies that transgender activists use is, as you said, they're self-selected people who identify as transgender. And as we have noted before, and as you know, even the activists will admit, the rates of comorbid conditions with people who have these gender identity issues are huge, you know, nearly 100%, I would guess. And that's because you develop this these identity issues as a coping mechanism to as a result of these underlying issues. And so it's not surprising that these kids are gonna report feelings of wanting to self-harm and potentially thinking about suicide, because they have these underlying issues that are not being dealt with. They're being told they're inherently flawed and that they have to run away from themselves to be okay. That basically who they are is not okay, and they're having parents, teachers, and therapists telling them that. So it's not surprising at all to me that they're having these difficult feelings.
Yeah, well, and some of those comorbid conditions that we recognize are autism. Mm-hmm. Autism is so overrepresented in the transgender identified mm-hmm. community. And people who are on the autism spectrum already struggle with discomfort with physical things. Some of the things that are comorbid with autism are sensory issues, social issues. They're already feeling like they don't fit in, like there's something wrong with their bodies. And then they hit adolescence. Autistic people don't like change. Right. They like things to stay the same. Well, when you're going through adolescence, everything's changing. Nothing's staying the same. And so to tell these kids on the autism spectrum that, oh, the reason you're feeling that way is because you're transgender. Oh, that's just so destructive, because not only are the kids going down a path that is not true, they're also not getting help for the things that are true. They're not getting support in the autism issues that they have. Also prior trauma. We know lots and lots of transgender identified people have prior trauma, whether it's, you know, a sexual trauma or a rejection trauma. They've had a loss, a significant loss in their lives, whether from the divorce of their parents or, again, some sort of assault that they've experienced. And again, by just slapping on this easy, simple label of, oh, you're transgender, the trauma is not getting dealt with.
And that to me is what's most heartbreaking about this is I, you know, think about myself and what would have happened if I had been affirmed. And first of all, you know, it would have confirmed the self-hatred that I had, that there was something so wrong with me that I should become something else. But it also would have further buried the trauma that I had. And I wouldn't have had anybody to help me process it. And it would have just sat there kind of, you know, infecting me for my whole life, rather than, you know, thankfully I lived at a time where therapists were willing to, you know, look at that deep, dark pit and figure out what was going on that was causing this child to hate herself so much that she wanted to be something else. And what is incredibly concerning to me now is that we have gender activists going into schools and telling kids as young as kindergarten that they can be born in the wrong body. And to me, I can't think of anything more damaging than to tell a child who's, you know, just starting to be social, who's just starting to go to school and learning to trust teachers and learning to trust adults other than their parents, that they could be born in the wrong body. That's a huge lie, first of all. It's a huge lie. And also, it creates this cognitive dissonance for a child where they're going to be constantly like, well, am I a boy? Am I a girl? And they're going to rely on those stereotypes that we've worked so hard to get away from to determine whether or not they're a boy or a girl, rather than just accepting the fact that they're female or male based on their biology.
And the gender identity is really just personality. Yeah. We're just talking about what your preferences are, what your personality is like, some of those traits that are personal to each one of us. And yes, I am a woman. I have XX chromosomes. I do not like shopping. I don't enjoy it. I hate buying shoes. This is not my thing. So society would tell me, well, then you're not a real woman. If you don't like shopping and buying shoes, then there's something wrong with you. You might want to look at whether you're actually a man. That's ridiculous. That's utterly ridiculous. I'm just a woman with certain personality traits and certain preferences. And we should not pathologize those. Right. That's part of true diversity. True diversity is appreciating people for who they are, not trying to tell them that there's something wrong with them and they're actually somebody else.
Yeah. I just find it so confounding. And as a parent, parents who are dealing with this, who are having children, who are coming home from school and saying, I haven't decided if I'm a boy or a girl yet, or the teacher tells me that I can be neither a boy or a girl, so I'm not sure what I am, or a child who says, I always thought I was a boy, but now I'm thinking maybe I'm a girl because I like to cook. Parents, how do they navigate this? Because the kids are getting such misinformation at school, and it's being reinforced now by a lot of the television shows, by books that are in the school libraries, by teachers who are willing to undermine parents and even suggest to children that they might be transgender if they're gender nonconforming. It's a lot. So we talked about in one issue, validating a child's feelings. Is there a place for parents at some point to challenge this narrative with facts?
I think that's exactly what we have to do. Parents need to educate themselves on this. And if you're watching this video, you're doing that. And really recognize some of these places that this is illogical, that this is not truthful. And parents need to start pushing back. In a future episode, we're going to talk about dealing with the school and some strategies for approaching teachers and principals and counselors about this. We need to be pushing back on our neighbors. And we don't have to be offensive and aggressive and mean about it, but we just need to start saying, you know, I really don't buy the gender ideology argument. Yeah. This doesn't make sense to me. I haven't seen anything that supports this in the research. If you have something, please show that to me, but I'm not seeing anything in this. And yeah. This is one of the insidious things, especially with young children, but really with any children, is that what the school is telling them is quite the opposite of what they're learning at home.
Right.
Because all of us, until very recently, have taught our kids, boys have a penis, girls have a vagina. Pretty simple, basic stuff. And now that very simple, clear, truthful, obvious lesson is being convoluted at school. So it's setting up a situation where a child has to say, do I believe mom and dad or do I believe my teacher? Yeah. And when you have people at school saying, and they are, if your parents don't agree with us, your parents are wrong. That's unconscionable to do.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's not that much different from a parent teaching a child that 1 + 1 = 2. And then that child going to school and the teacher saying, oh no, 1 + 1 can be 3, it can be 4, it can be 0, it can be whatever you want it to be. I mean, that's basically what's happening. And boy, how confusing for kids.
Yeah, it really is. Well, and one of the other things I really wanted to touch on today is some of the propaganda and slogans that have been put out there by the gender industry. slogans like you can be born in the wrong body, mm-hmm. or trans women are women, mm-hmm. or what are some others? Love has no labels. Trans rights are human rights. Slogans like those serve to stop thought. Mm-hmm. When somebody has a really quick, pithy, one-off little phrase they can throw out, and you see this all the time. You see this all the time. If you have a question about gender ideology, or, you know, wait a minute, why are we affirming? As soon as you raise your question, you will immediately be called a TERF, mm-hmm. trans exclusive, radical feminist. You will be called a bigot. You will be called a hater. You'll be called a transphobe. And those epithets and slogans are purposeful. They are intentional. They're not truthful. They're there to stop thought. Because if you are not allowed to question this, then you can't push back on it.
Right.
And we need to really be asking ourselves, what do these slogans mean? Trans women are women.
Yeah.
Trans women are men,
mm-hmm.
who pretend to be women.
Yeah.
And if we say that they're women, we have obliterated the case, the whole category of woman. Because what is a woman? And I can't believe we're at a place in society now where that's a big question that people say they can't answer.
Yeah.
The answer right now is a woman is anyone who says she's a woman. What's the definition of a woman, Erin?
It's a biological female.
Yes, it's an adult.
And we know this. Yeah, it's again, it's dangerous both emotionally, psychically in our society, but fundamentally it's a dangerous path to put a child on, because it casts doubt on reality. It puts them on a path where they're going to damage their healthy body. It puts them on a path to be medicalized for the rest of their lives. And so this isn't just about, you know, some kind of, and, you know, benign ideology where, you know, those silly kids, they want to be called they and them instead of he or she, you know, which if that were the case, it would be sort of a normal case of, you know, teenagers pushing against the system. This is much more dangerous. As you said, it threatens to obliterate categories such as male and female, which are important categories for us to have. It obliterates biology and basic reality, really. So we have a video here from a doctor who's going to talk about the fact that this, you know, it's biology. You know, it's not feelings. Feelings do not define our biology.
Congratulations, it's a boy. Or congratulations, it's a girl. As a pediatrician for nearly 20 years, that's how many of my patient relationships began. Our bodies declare our sex. Biological sex is not assigned. Sex is determined at conception by our DNA, stamped into every cell of our bodies. Human sexuality is binary. Either you have a normal Y chromosome and develop into a male, or you don't, and you will develop into a female. There are at least 6,500 genetic differences between men and women. Hormones and surgery cannot and do not change this. Look, an identity is not biological, it is psychological. Identity has to do with thinking and feeling. Thoughts and feelings are not biologically hardwired. Our thinking and feeling may be factually right or factually wrong. For example, if I walk into my doctor's office today and say, "Hi, I'm Margaret Thatcher," my physician will say I am delusional and give me an antipsychotic. However, if instead I walked in and said, "I am a man," he would say, "Congratulations, you're transgender." If I were to say, "Doctor, I am suicidal. I'm an amputee trapped in a normal body. Please surgically remove my leg," I'll be diagnosed with body identity integrity disorder. But if I walk up to that same doctor and say, "I'm a man, sign me up for a double mastectomy," my physician will. See, according to most mainstream medical organizations, if you want to cut off a healthy arm or a healthy leg, you're mentally ill. But if you want to cut off healthy breasts or a penis, you're transgender. Let's be clear, no one is born transgender. If gender identity were hardwired in the brain before birth, identical twins would have the same gender identity 100% of the time. They don't. I had one little boy, a patient we'll call Andy. Between the ages of 3 and 5, he increasingly played with girls and stereotypical girl toys and started saying he was a girl. I referred the parents and Andy to a therapist. Sometimes mental illness of a parent or abuse of the child are factors. But more commonly, the child has misperceived family dynamics and internalized a false belief. In the middle of one session, Andy put down the toy truck and held on to the Barbie and said, "Mommy and Daddy, you don't love me when I'm a boy." What the therapist learned is that when Andy was 3, his sister with special needs was born. She required significantly more of his parents' care and attention. Andy misperceived this as, "Mommy and Daddy love girls. If I want them to love me again, I have to be a girl." With family therapy, Andy got better. Today, Andy's parents would be told something quite different. They would hear, "This is who Andy really is. You must change his name, ensure that everyone treats him as a girl, or else he will commit suicide." As Andy would approach puberty, the experts would put him on puberty blockers so that he could continue to impersonate a girl. Experts assure us it doesn't matter that we've never tested puberty blockers in biologically normal children. It doesn't matter that when blockers are used to treat prostate cancer in men and gynecologic problems in women, that they cause problems with memory. We don't need testing. No, we need to arrest his physical development now, or he'll commit suicide. But this is not true. Instead, when supported in their biological sex through natural puberty, the vast majority of gender-confused children get better. Yet, we are chemically castrating gender-confused children with puberty blockers. Then, we permanently sterilize many of them by adding cross-sex hormones. Cross-sex hormones are estrogen and testosterone. Those put young children at risk for heart disease, strokes, diabetes, cancers, and even the very emotional problems that experts claim to be preventing. P.S. If a girl who insists she is a man has been on testosterone daily for 1 year, she's cleared to get a bilateral mastectomy at age 16. Now, mind you, the American Academy of Pediatrics recently came out with a report that urges pediatricians to caution teenagers about getting tattoos because tattoos are essentially permanent and can cause scarring. But this same AAP is 110% in support of 16-year-old girls getting a double mastectomy, even without parental consent, so long as the girl insists that she is a man and has been taking testosterone daily for 1 year. Let's be clear, to indoctrinate all children from preschool forward with the lie that they could be trapped in the wrong body disrupts the very foundation of a child's reality testing. If a child can't trust the reality of their physical bodies, who or what can they trust? Transgender ideology in schools is psychological abuse that often leads to chemical castration, sterilization, and surgical mutilation. If that's not child abuse, ladies and gentlemen, what is?
I really love listening to Michelle Cretella. She really gets it. I mean, she's been a pediatrician for years. She really understands the facts about biology.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've heard doctors talk about, which I think is important,
Dr. Cretella's
video, is that our DNA is stamped in every cell of our body. It's in every organ. It's in our brains. It's in our liver. It's in our heart. And this is important because the healthcare that people receive is based on their biology, the dosage of certain medications that they get, the diagnosis that they get, because certain conditions exhibit differently depending on whether you're a man or a woman. Even something like getting an organ transplant can be, if you get an organ from the same sex you are, it's gonna work better than if you get an organ from the opposite sex. And it's because this is a biological truth. You know, it's not based on feelings. And I've actually seen stories where there are people who go to the doctor and they're transgender and they tell the doctor that they're the opposite sex. The doctor treats them as such and they get the wrong medical care because of it.
Yeah. There was a case, I believe, where a pregnant woman went to the doctor and was having stomach pains, but told the doctor she was male. She presented as male and told the doctor she was a man, and the baby died.
Wow.
they didn't know they were dealing with a pregnant woman.
And of course, why would they even consider that? That's not, you know, as soon as someone says they're a man, there are certain conditions that you just don't even consider because they're not something that men ever have.
Right. And we see this affecting so many areas of life. And I'm thinking about sports.
Yeah.
You know, if we accept a lie that a boy can be a girl, and therefore a boy can play in girls' sports because he thinks he's a girl, I'm sorry, that boy's body is going to give him an advantage in the sports. And that's what we're seeing all over the place. I believe it was Coach Linda Blade who said that there is a 12%, on average, a 12% benefit that men and boys have over women and girls, all other things being equal, just by virtue of them being male.
Yeah.
If they've gone through male puberty, 15-year-old boys on a high school soccer team will beat an elite world-class women's soccer team. They've played games. 15-year-old high school boys who just play soccer for fun will beat an elite women's team because they are bigger, stronger, faster. Their bodies have that advantage. And we can't ignore that.
And interestingly, a study was just released where the researchers looked at men who had been on estrogen for a year, drug to suppress the testosterone and estrogen for a year, because that's the requirement in some of the sport bodies. That's the way they determine whether or not someone gets to compete as a woman. And yet this study found that, you know, which most of us I think would realize that even after of a year of having testosterone suppressed and being on female hormones, these men still had a tremendous advantage, a quantifiable advantage over women. And again, the other thing that just keeps coming back to me is that this is based on feelings, and people lie to gain advantage all the time. We know this happens. And so it's astonishing to me that we're just accepting that if somebody says that they feel like they're something, then they are that something, because we know people lie to gain advantage. So on so many levels, this narrative is just undermining reality and really dangerous for our kids.
Well, and it really is moving into the area of being a religion.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to talk about that in our next episode, is some of the cultic aspects of this.
Right.
But believing in something that there's no physical evidence for really moves into the territory of a theology.
Right.
And I think that's what we're seeing with this, because there is no evidence that one's soul is sexed, that one's soul can be male or female.
Yeah.
But that's really the essence of this, is that I know my soul and
authentic self, which is basically a soul. I mean, authentic self is so sort of a nebulous term. And the only thing that I can think of is soul to sort of capture that idea.
Well, and the idea that children know who they are, I find that ludicrous. Part of the task of childhood and adolescence is finding out who you are. And so when I was 13, 14, 15, I was trying on different identities. I tried being an athlete. I told my kids this and they laughed because I'm not an athlete, but I gave it a try. I tried out for the basketball team. I did not win. I ran in soccer and I did okay, but it wasn't my thing. I tried doing the foreign language club, and I'm going to be, you know, the French chic girl, and like, no, that didn't really quite fit me either. So that's what kids should be doing, is trying on different identities. Why would we cement them in one of those? Why
not
would
only
we
cement them one? But then medicalize it. I mean, it's just astonishing, because like you said, that's what adolescence is about, is sort of figuring out who you are, trying different things out. Imagine if every time a 13-year-old said, you know, I want to be a doctor. And then from there on out, there was no other option. That child had to be a doctor. Or what if they said, you know, I want to be a construction worker. Okay, that's what you're going to be. You want to be a construction worker. That's your authentic self. And we will only allow people to talk to you who will affirm that you are going to be a construction worker. Yeah. I mean, it's absurd.
When you start applying it to younger and younger and younger kids, mm-hmm. because we hear this is what the gender industry is doing. They keep pushing it lower, lower, lower.
Yeah.
Diane Ehrensaft, this gender researcher.
Yeah, she's absurd.
Maybe we can get a video of this.
She's just absurd.
I have a colleague who's transgender, and there is a video of him as a toddler. So he was assigned female at birth. There is a video of him as a toddler tearing barrettes out of then her hair and throwing them on the ground and sobbing. That's a gender message. So you look for those kinds of actions, like tearing a skirt off. There was one where this child wore the little onesies with snap-ups in between the legs, and at age one would unsnap them to make a dress and have the dress flow. This was a child who was assigned male. That's a communication, a pre-verbal communication.
And that these are like ways in which pre-verbal babies try to signal what sex they are. This is absurd.
I want to ask her, like, have you ever spent any time with a small child? I remember, I'm going to tell the story of my son again, when he was little and in his car seat, in the back seat, and it was facing forward now, he would take his shoes off constantly in there. And I remember my husband and I were new parents. This was our first child. We'd be in the car and we'd be turning around, leave your shoes on. Don't take your shoes off. Don't leave your shoes on. And he just delighted in taking his shoes off. And what does that mean? What is he telling us about?
Oh my gosh, maybe he's not human.
Maybe we should have had his feet amputated, because right. I think he's saying that we're being facetious here, just in case anybody's popping in. Yes. We're being facetious here. But this is the sort of thing that Diane Ehrensaft believes.
Yeah, this is the absurdity. And to me, it's incredibly concerning that someone like her has an international platform in order to spew this absurdity. So we have a few questions from parents today. The first one says, arguing from logic doesn't seem to be making a dent with my daughter in the least. Why can't these kids see the inconsistencies and hypocrisies of this? And wow, great question. And I think it harkens back to what you said, is that this is not about logic. It's not about science. It's about a belief system.
Yeah, it really is. And the slogans that have been applied to it, as we said earlier, are designed to stop thought. So when you go to your child and you say, you know, there's no evidence that one can be born in the wrong body, what your child may say back to you is what the child's been taught. Trans women are women.
Right.
That doesn't address what I just said to you. They're not addressing the actual facts. So how do we get through to kids? How do we get through to people who are so insistent that this is, they're zealots for this ideology?
And I think that our next episode, I believe, is on kind of the brainwashing that happens and how this is really much more like a cult than it is, you know, there's no scientific foundation on this. So depending on where your child is on this, you might be able to use reasonable thought. But if they have been completely indoctrinated into this, then you're going to have to use different techniques. Just telling them, you know, let's go get your DNA tested to see what your chromosomes show. Isn't going to be effective. They're going to just say you're transphobic because you are not validating their feelings. And so it is, I believe what we have to do as parents is to get into the schools and stop this from happening before our children are indoctrinated, because once they are indoctrinated, it's incredibly hard to deprogram them.
Well, and one important strategy, and you can use this with anyone that you're arguing with about something, is just asking questions, because it's harder to throw those slogans back at a question. Mm-hmm. Because if you really believe that you're right, you ought to be able to answer questions about it. So just asking a real simple question like, well, is gender fixed or is it fluid? Mm-hmm. You know, is it something that, no kidding, this is what it is and it's never going to change? Or is it something that's fluid over a lifetime? Because the answer to that question, whether you say it's fixed or it's fluid, both of those completely undermine the transgender industry.
Yeah.
Because if it's fixed, then you need to ask, at what point in time is it fixed?
Mm-hmm.
And why would we ever solidify somebody in it before that time at which it's fixed? And the gender industry will not put a finger on when it's fixed, because as we said, they keep trying to push it earlier and earlier and earlier and earlier.
Right. And not only that, but they keep trying to justify people who change, who come out as non-binary and then as transgender. And, you know, there's this, they want the ability for people to be fluid, while at the same time, they're saying people are born this way.
Right. But if somebody comes out and says, you know what, I thought I was transgender, but I was wrong. I'm actually the sex I was. Oh, they don't like that at all. Yeah. They will not affirm that.
So there's a fluidity in one direction, but not the other that's accepted. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
And another good question is, what does it feel like to be a woman? What does it feel like to be a man? Can you explain, like, what are those feelings that you're having that lead you to believe that that's how it feels like to be the opposite sex? Because, you know, honestly, I don't know what it feels like to be a woman. I mean,
I don't know what it feels like to be Aaron, right?
And I know that I am a woman. So that's where I think this ideology, I think you're right, asking questions. And if somebody, again, if somebody is really entrenched in it, then using logic is not going to work. There's a book by Peter Boghossian, and he talks about this. I'll put it in the description. He talks about how to, challenge someone in their belief systems and the different techniques to be used. And you really have to be gentle and compassionate when you do it. And you have to determine what your goal is, because a lot of times people's goal is to win an argument. And in this case, that should not be your intended outcome. Your intended outcome should be more an understanding, because this ideology is so full of holes that if you're able to have conversations with someone and have that respect and have that give and take, eventually they're going to see those holes. And so I would really recommend that book. Do we have another question?
Yeah, we do. I want to read that book though.
It's really good. And I've been practicing, and I've learned so much just from the first couple of chapters. So I really,
Well, and I think I want to go back to what you said about being honest and being gentle and being caring, because really the goal is to have a restored relationship and for both of you to come closer to truth, because there are some things that you probably don't understand about what that person's going through. And so having a really genuine questioning, like, I want to understand this, it can serve the dual purpose of kind of healing your relationship as well as helping bring truth into the conversation.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have one more question. I think we kind of addressed this one already. Listening to my kid talk about gender sounds like listening to a religious zealot. Mm-hmm. Am I crazy to think this is a new kind of religion?
Yeah, and it really, like, it has all the hallmarks of a religion. I was thinking about it the other day, how, you know, if somebody challenges this, they are, it's like they're cast out. I'm not sure what the word is when you say something blasphemous about a religion and you're kicked out, but that's really how it is. You're not allowed to challenge the authorities. It's very rigid in its thinking, and it's very based on a lot of these rituals. You know, the children, they get sucked in, and there are these rituals that are celebrated, you know, puberty blockers. You went on puberty blockers, there's a big celebration. You go on cross-sex hormones, there's a big celebration. You get your breasts lopped off, that's a big celebration. And so it's really this, it's almost like there's these religious activities that happen. And then they go to these meetings. And if you go to the meetings, again, they're very much based on feelings. They're based on, bringing the group together and solidifying the members as part of that group. All of these things are hallmarks of religions.
Yeah. Well, and the whole in-group and out-group thing, mm-hmm. That's very indicative of a religion. We are the true mm-hmm. good people. We are the true ones who have understanding, and everybody else is on the outside and not to be trusted.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about the word ally, you know, that word has been used in the gender industry that you're either an ally or you're not. Mm-hmm. Well, what's the opposite of an ally? It's an enemy. There's no middle ground. Mm-hmm. There's no middle ground in a war. And they've really set this up with a lot of warlike language. And I would even call it a religious inquisition. Mm-hmm. Are you an ally? What are you doing to prove you're an ally?
And if you're not an ally, I don't want anything to do with you. You're evil. You're mm-hmm. evil. These are all very religious ideas.
Yeah, they really are.
Yeah. And it's really sad. And I think that, again, determining how far in your child is really important, because if they're just sort of putting their foot in it, then you're going to address this in a very different way than if they have totally converted. And again, it's a conversion process. It's a come to trans moment, and they have the big T truth. And anybody who doesn't agree with you is evil, and you shouldn't even spend time around them. And that's the indication of not just a religion, but a cult, that they're suggesting people engage in self-harming behaviors. They're suggesting that people isolate from others. You know, these are things that are really cult-like behavior. So it's not just a religious belief system, it's a cult belief system. And in our next episode, we'll get into some techniques for how to handle that. And again, we are not experts on this. And we will post resources for people who are, because it's really important if your kid is really far in that you access those resources.
Yeah. Well, this has been a great conversation, Erin. I'm looking forward to our next episode.
Yeah, me too. Thank you so much, Maria.
We are not doctors or therapists. We are not giving medical or psychiatric advice, and we offer no guarantee of outcome. We simply want to talk about how to support and love kids using long understood practices from the fields of psychology, education, and child development. We're glad you joined in our conversation today.